There you go, Kenny.
Thank you, Stiz.
Ken's favorite one-hit wonder.
You can't turn this off. If it comes on, it stays on.
It is kind of a vibe.
It's the Shawshank of music.
It's catchy. You can't deny that, Rich.
It's fine. This is a fine song. This is like a Toad the Wet Sprocket song. It's like tonic.
Come on.
It's a shot.
Toad the Wet.
As I said, they're good songs and they're on, but I'm not going to buy their album. You know, it's like when Vertical Horizon comes on, I'm like, cool.
I mean, your Aha song comes on, I fall asleep. I mean, it's just, this is an upbeat. This gets you going.
I mean,
take on the night.
I don't know, man. Aha's, that's a catchy song, man.
Yeah, take on me after all these years is still great.
It's really good.
It's still excellent. All right, 617-779-7937 is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson. And you can give us a call, 93.7 WEEI. We are in the Catches Law Injury Attorney Studio. No fee unless you win. Also, launch a take grenade. We'll play your messages in the 5 o'clock hour. Just go to the Odyssey app, press that microphone, and we play those later on. That was the voice of Tracy McGrady. Tracy McGrady, who is a good buddy of Jaylen Brown. And, you know, I said this when the trade happened, and I still believe it. I think there were basketball reasons for getting rid of Jaylen Brown. What pissed me off was that because you got crap for him, you did not need to trade him. There was no rush. Paul George wasn't going anywhere. I believe that you could have kept him around for another year and it wouldn't have changed anything. But apparently it seems like it was combustible and now they're all gone. So now we take a look at not only what's going on with the Celtics and their totally jacked coach, Joe Mazzulla.
Don't rip on Mazzulla. He's going to come in here and get you in the dojo.
Like, okay.
Every offseason, he does something like this.
Who here was the most shocked? Who was shocked when Joe Mazzulla took his shirt off in that video and was absolutely jacked?
I knew he fought, and I knew he loved MMA and jiu-jitsu. I didn't know he was that jacked.
Somebody said it. I saw somebody say, this is who Dwight Schrute thinks he was. Joe Mazzulla is like kind of a nerd and he talks about dojos and stuff like that and like uses all this philosophy, but the guy actually seems like he can fight.
Yeah, and again, I said it yesterday, but I'm happy knowing that my coach will beat the F out of your coach. 100%.
I can't think of another coach that could do it.
I want to, you know, beat him mentally, not physically.
And players do like him. I mean, I don't love his 3-point philosophy, if that indeed is him and not Brad Stevens who's driving
it's
that.
Him, I think.
You think it's Mazzulla?
I think it might. They're both on the same page. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
They're both on the same page with that.
So I'm thinking less now about the Celtics because I think the Celtics are going to be very good. They're going to be very good. Are they going to be as good as they were without Jaylen Brown? I don't think so. But they're going to be very good. They're a good team. And I think it frees up Jason Tatum to become someone who can ascend to the next level the same way Jaylen Brown did. As long as he comes back healthy, great. I've said this before, I don't even imagine this team with Paul George. He's not even a player on the Celtics, as far as I'm concerned. The guy's old, you know, who knows how much time he's going to get. To me, if he's healthy and gets out there, it's just gravy.
But that's a problem. You traded Jaylen Brown for Paul George.
It's
you're saying he's
trade.
Not going to play.
It's an awful trade.
So you're worse.
Well, you're worse, but you did do two things that you needed. You needed to get a legit big man in there, and you did with Mitchell Robinson. And I think Ted agrees with me, is that that was a team that was missing some sort of veteran presence. A guy who was like a Drew Holiday or like an Al Horford who could be the adult in the room. And there's really not many better people you could have gotten than Mike Conley Jr. He's not going to play that much, but my God, he every year gets that award for being like the best dude in the NBA, whatever that is, like nicest guy. And the players love him and they respect him. And he just seems like a guy that winning finds him. So that part of it's good. But as I said, it's not even the Celtics I'm thinking about. I'm looking at this new Sixers team and that report right there where Tracy McGrady, best buddy of Jaylen Brown, is saying that he hasn't even reached out to Joel Embiid and Joel Embiid hasn't even reached out to him. I keep thinking about this. Like, imagine making a huge trade. Imagine if the Celtics got like a huge player, like a guy whose name was in the conversation for MVP. Like, let's say it's like, you know, SGA. I'm just throwing that out there. And he was coming to the Celtics. Could you imagine what people would be saying if SGA had not reached out to Jason Tatum yet?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you'd be like, are you kidding me?
Now, there was some damage control. Somebody was like, oh, they did talk. Probably somebody from the Sixers PR staff was like, they've talked. That's not true or something. But it certainly sounds like if they've talked, it's been brief.
You know, oh, yeah.
It was Tyler Hero and Bam talking. You know?
Right. They talk with their fists. So I think that there is a large chance that Sixers team can implode because you have so many alphas and not enough ball between all of them. when you've got Joel Embiid, who is the guy, and then you've got Tyrese Maxey, who is becoming the guy, and then you've got a dude coming in who wants to prove everybody wrong that his value is higher than this Paul George trade indicated, then you're going to have a situation where you're going to, I don't know how you can possibly function when it's like that. And it's the Sixers. They're a loser organization. I don't know if they're going to be able to handle this well. However, there is one thing that might end up being the turd in the punch bowl for the Celtics. And this is it. Stiz, can you play that clip from Shams? Let's take a listen.
Malika, last time me and you shared the screen together, you were out there in Wimbledon, out in London, yeah. And we were breaking into a major program to discuss LeBron James deciding to leave the Lakers after 8 years to then play elsewhere for a historic 24th NBA season. At the time, I remember I told you my reporting was Cleveland, Miami, and Golden State were the three leaders for him. And now that you're stateside, some things have changed. Some things are still the same. Okay. Those three teams are still in it. The Sixers have since acquired Jaylen Brown. Minnesota, we know, already got LaMelo Ball. They are also two of the teams that are involved. But my understanding is right now, as we speak, LeBron James has the information that's needed to make a decision. It's decision time right now for LeBron James. Team presidents, GMs, they're all talking to Rich Paul here again this week. They've made all their pitches. LeBron James has listened to multiple voice notes delivered to him by Rich Paul from other owners and presidents from teams that are trying to give him their best pitch. And the feel is that those five teams remain in the mix, but a focus on Cleveland, Miami, and Philadelphia. And he's made it clear he wants to be a part of a team where he has a chance to compete for a championship, a new team environment and culture he can be a part of. But the reason that this
that's
is
all I need to hear.
So-
that's all I need to hear. Mm. So Philadelphia is one of the teams that he's considering.
Mm-hmm. I would love that.
I can't stand LeBron. You know that, unless he's a Celtic, of course, then he's the greatest. But I can't stand the guy. If he goes to Philly, that's bad news for the Celtics. Because I have a feeling all of those three who couldn't get along and all of those three who think they're alphas, LeBron James shows up, there's an alpha.
Teddy,
everyone knows who
Teddy,
is.
Why would you love it?
Just because it would be I think they'd just go down in a blaze of glory. I think it'd be just dysfunction from the get-go. I think
Teddy woke up and chose violence.
I think the egos, everybody's pulling in different directions. It just would be, to me, a dumpster fire.
Do you think that, because I have a little bit of a different opinion, I think that LeBron comes in and everybody, including Joel Embiid, steps back and goes, you're the guy. All right, well, now we know who's in charge. You're the one. Show us how to win. Because, I mean, none of these guys, Jalen's won before, but, I mean, even he's stepping back and going, LeBron, dude, you're the guy. Now, what it does do is it makes the ultimate villain. I mean, in the East, you want to talk about a team that the Celtics are going to get amped for every single game all over the NBA. You're going to look at that team because that is the new version of a super team. You know, because with this whole salary thing and the shelf, you know, we've had eight different champions over 8 years. You can't make the teams like you used to, but the Sixers found a way to do it. They found a way to do it.
But don't you think LeBron's smart enough to see that possibility? I mean, I do think he wants to chase Jordan and the titles, so it matters where he goes. He wants to go to the place where he thinks he can win. Philadelphia is not that for all the reasons you just listed. Why would he choose that?
You know, I heard Charles Barkley say something about why he doesn't respect LeBron's championships as much as Michael's. And he said, because LeBron stacks his teams. And he said, I don't think I'm the only one who thinks that. I think there's a lot of people, you know, who've played the game before who don't think that LeBron earned it the way that Michael did. And I wonder if he's hearing that talk. And if that's the case, maybe he would stay away from a place like the Sixers. I just don't know how it adds to your legacy to go back to one of the two cities that you've already won in, like Miami or Cleveland.
But I think Cleveland, though, first of all, it's his hometown. Everybody can kind of get behind that and say, oh, that makes sense. He would go full circle. And they are a team that needs something to get them over the hump. Like, they're missing that heart or that X factor. I mean, they were in the conference finals, but they're not close to being, nobody thinks they're an NBA favorite. So if he goes back and wins, you don't think that's impressive?
I know it's impressive that he wins, but it's even more impressive to say that every team I went to, I won a championship.
So it's just some new team.
Right. Yeah, it's some new team. And especially like a team. When was the last time that the Sixers won? Was it early 80s? Like 83 or something like that? Yeah. So, I mean, it's a huge story. He's probably looking at what's going on in New York and like, oh, it's been so long. And Brunson basically could, you know, a run for Lord of New York and he would win. And I think that LeBron sees that, and he sees the respect that he could get if he goes to a new city and wins another championship. And to be quite honest, that to me is more impressive on paper, is that you went to every different city. You went to, what would it be, four different cities, and you won a championship at every one? Hell yeah.
Now, but Jaylen Brown, this is a couple years ago at the Summer League, but saying, I don't think Bronny is a pro. I know they're supposedly
over that. It's so
that
great.
That has to stick. I mean, if somebody ripped your kid, you wouldn't forget it, even if they apologized, right?
Well, he went to war with Stephen A. over Bronny.
Yeah.
What am I missing, though? You also got to think about what's he going to want for a salary. If you're telling me he wants minimum salary, okay, but Joel Embiid's making $58 million. Jaylen Brown, $58 million. Tyrese Maxey, $40 million. They're currently $57 million over the cap.
He doesn't care. According to reports, he wants a championship. He does not care how much he gets paid. And he's already, apparently, according to Shams, said that that's one of the teams he wants to play for.
He's going to Cleveland. Rich is calling me Kalshi Ken. 41%. Cleveland is the favorite right now at Kalshi.
Boring.
I know it's boring. I know you don't like it because of that. Because
I think Miami would have been
Philly.
Cool.
You want the Death Star.
But no, I actually don't want Philly because I think that I want to watch Jaylen Brown and Maxey and Joel just implode. Like, that's what I want to see. Because it will. Like, I couldn't write it down. Today is the day I predict that whole thing is going to implode. The first 2 months, there's going to be people calling and saying, Rich, you're an idiot. Look at how good they are. They're dominating. Yeah, like, statistically, one of the best teams. And then January and February, you're going to watch. You're in those dead months when it did the mid-season basketball, when they just the travel sucks and it's not as fun and the mid-season tournament's over, you know.
It's the NBA Cup, thank you.
Yes, that's when they're going to just like just turn on each other.
You're wrong on two things. We have two bets now. I think Messi beats Brunson for best athlete. That's
the worst
tonight.
What are we betting? Because I'll bet anything. I'll bet my left nut. That there's Jesus. No that Jaylen Brunson.
I'm not matching that.
He's got two. So.
I'm not matching. We'll come up with something a little more palatable.
Sure.
And I think the Sixers are going farther than the Celtics. And I'll tell you one thing about LeBron. He better decide this week because people have had it. This cannot go on like all summer. How long is he dragging this out?
This is
for?
Where LeBron does.
Make a freaking decision.
Yeah, I hear you. You know what's fine? Real quick, to find interesting is that the 76ers have a new manager, general manager.
Yep.
He's been there since June 4th, and this guy is making big deals. Who comes in?
Who is this?
Mike Gansey.
Great job.
Mike Gansey, 43 years old. He spent 15 seasons with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was hired on June 4th, and he's making these kinds of moves. That's pretty ballsy, man.
Somebody on text says, yeah, but we have optionality.
There we go.
That's all you need,
baby. Brad just gifted this guy. He just left a present on the doorstep. Here's Jaylen for nothing.
Absolutely. That's all you need. 617-779-7937. Not going anywhere. Back in 2 minutes, it looks like the Red Sox might actually go all in. There's some reports that say that they are being encouraged and they are making phone calls. We will get to that right after this. This is a better one-hit wonder than Save the Night.
Not. Weddings of Children.
This is another song that sounds better when you've been drinking.
Yeah, it's fine. It's like, it's not unpleasant. It's just not Save the Night. I mean, come on.
I think the singer is like this kind of,
you can't,
like,
dance to Save. You can dance to this song.
Yeah.
Is that, if that's a defining?
Okay, that's not, yeah, that's not critical to me.
Okay.
Not,
I mean, All right. But this is one of those late night, you've been boozing a little bit.
Yeah. It's a wedding song.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good wedding song.
My aunt's wedding.
Really good wedding song.
Yeah, yeah. Like there are bad wedding songs. And you know what the worst one is? And it's at every wedding is, tonight's gonna be a good night.
Oh my God. I had like three weddings over the past 6 months. Unbelievable.
Is that Black Eyed Peas?
Yes. And matter of fact, it's so bad. You know, if you play three Black Eyed Peas songs back to back, the portal to hell opens.
The whites love that song.
The whites love tonight's gonna be. It's like, here comes Aunt Edna. Look, she's getting crazy.
WPS, as Wiggy says.
Yeah, that's not a good wedding song.
Oh, by the way, Wiggy wanted to note that Patty LaBelle's pie referenced a specific pie that is sold at Walmart, and there is one sold every 2 seconds. So that's what he was referring to about Patty LaBelle.
Hell yeah.
My goodness.
As Wiggy called it.
Hopefully she's making that money. Like, you know, like who is it? Who's the musician who just made a ton of money off of, like, lipstick? Oh, Rihanna. Rihanna's made like a ton of money off of it's either clothing or I think it's like makeup. She's a billionaire, I believe.
She brings it. Dude, Rihanna was pregnant when she did her halftime.
She was
and
great.
I was like, it was amazing.
Yep.
Amazing, Rihanna. Where have you been? Where'd she go?
I do like that caller called in and said, we have to like every halftime show. And I would say, I give you Maroon 5.
Maroon 5. That's a clunker.
My favorite part was when he took his shirt off.
The Weeknd also not that inspiring.
Oh, I thought the weekend was great.
Okay. He was okay. He was just like walking through that maze of...
To do that during COVID? Yeah. Like when there were all these restrictions and rules and they were able to... I thought that was really good.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. Now, it wasn't, of course, you know, Elvis Presto in the 3D one that was back in the day. Do you remember that? When they did a card trick?
Up with people? No, that's before my time.
No, that was like right... It was the one before Michael Jackson, I think. And Michael Jackson just ended it all. Like, that was like one of the first Super Bowl halftime shows I ever remember.
He was the first legit one, I think.
It seems like it. He might have been. And then after that, I think went like New Kids on the Block, and then there we go. And then it took off from there. All right, 617-779-7937. You can give us a call. We're at a point now with this Boston Red Sox team where they are looking at a strange spot that they're in, because you remember the sound clip that we played from Sam Kennedy on Greg Hill's show, man, only like 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
It was like 3 weeks ago, and it was when he came on for the first time, and much like the bad dudes from the Da Vinci Code, he was whipping himself in the back.
Totally fell on the sword. Oh,
yeah, Opus Dei, I'm the worst. And he said all the right things in that aspect, because they did suck at the time. And he said that any kind of thoughts that they had towards, you know, making some sort of move at the trade deadline, they were thinking about pivoting. And at the time, we all went, yeah, this team isn't worth investing in.
But by the way, prior to that, they were aggressively seeking a bat with ownership involvement, right?
Oh, can I?
So they've already flip-flopped once.
Well, let me, I'm glad you brought that up.
Understandable.
Do you remember when that report came out?
Buster Olney with us, and I don't remember the date.
It was June 4th, okay?
Okay.
And do you know the record of the Red Sox on June 4th when that report came out? This is what they said. The report was basically they were going to go get a big bat. They were interested in getting a big bat.
And ownership was making calls.
Making calls, and that they would be willing to take on money.
Were they like 5 under? What were they?
They were 27 and 35.
Wow.
So pretty bad shape.
8 under.
Wow.
So they're 2 under now. So... They obviously, you would think that they'd still have that same thinking in mind, if not even greater. So for them to be 8 under at that time and have that report come out, to me, you're on the hook, boys. You should be looking for a big right-handed bat right now.
Right. Unless they are content to just compete now that the fan base has kind of calmed down and they're like, right, we can just sail into the lockout. Well, not to be a conspiracy guy.
No, well, I think that the worst thing that could happen is for them to take a look at this team and go, you know, John Henry say, this team is all playing better. Look, everyone's playing at the level that we thought they'd be. And instead of making a trade, it's going to be like we made a trade in that we're going to get all our injured guys back.
Which they have a bunch.
Which they have a bunch. But listen to Rob Bradford yesterday. It doesn't look like any of them are coming back soon.
That is a fascinating point of the whole story, though, is how they view the guys that come back off of injury. How do they view them? Do they put them in? Do they Trevor Story's making a lot of money. Do they not play Trevor Story when he comes back?
That's part of your trade. You might try to unload Trevor Story as part of your deal. Like, and that, unfortunately, to get somebody to take his contract, you would have to get less in return or give up more prospects with him to package him away. But same with Duran. Are you maybe thinking about getting rid of Duran to free up a spot for somebody who comes?
Of course you are. Because if, you know, when Roman Anthony comes back,
That was the plan.
Gluttony of outfielders.
The plan was to play Roman in left field all year, to have him play the field and not be a DH. But now I don't know what to your point, Rich. I don't know what the Roman Anthony plan is. I do think, if I had to predict, Roman Anthony will come back at some point. He can't not come back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he will be decent. I don't think he'll be horrible, and I think they'll find a way to play him part-time, though. It's not going to be like a starting spot like he used to have.
Well, Jen McCaffrey, who writes for The Athletic and the New York Times, she did a big story about what the Red Sox are going to end up doing, and she talked to some people around the league, and one National League evaluator said, so much for selling, they have to be all in. So there's people around the league looking at what they're doing right now and saying, how can you not be all in when you see the way these guys are playing? And they're probably also looking at possibly these guys coming back from injury. And if all the dominoes fall exactly the right way you want them to, you're going to have continued play at this level from the guys who are healthy. The guys who aren't healthy are going to come back. It's only going to make your team better. And then if you turbocharge it and press the NOS button, you make a huge trade for a big bat to put in the middle of the lineup. And I'm telling you, this American League sucks. I would put you up against almost anybody if those three things were to happen. Mm-hmm. So why not give yourself the best chance to make those three things happen?
And they have two players they acquired, Sonny Gray and Wilson Contreras, who are older guys, you're in win now mode with those players. I mean, I know Wilson says he wants to stay here, but that's like 3 years at most, right?
Yeah. Now, let's get to the most important thing about all of this. Steve, on line one. Steve, what's happening, my man?
Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I think you're missing the whole meaning behind what Wiggy was telling you.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed. He said, you haven't lived until you've eaten Patty's, that's very close, saying first name. Sweet potato pie was sort of a sexual overtone to it.
Oh, boy.
No, she's literally, Steve.
She sells pies at Walmart.
Right, she's, you know.
We're talking, you know, this could have been 30 years ago. I don't know.
Listen, I don't
know. He has traveled the country. He was in Minnesota with a noted boat incident, which he denies.
Sure.
He was in West Virginia with the Marshals, so he's, and in Georgia.
Yeah.
Played for Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Patty, you know, she looks great at 82. I bet she looked great at 52.
If actual pies were not being sold, I might go there, right. Steve, but there's
that's where Jackson went, right?
Patty LaBelle.
There's
pies.
Nothing better that I love is that we're like in this like big heated sports debate and everyone's talking sports. Someone goes, hey, when you guys were talking about Patty LaBelle and her pies, he meant humping. Oh, our listeners are the best. 617-779-7937. More talk about Patty LaBelle and humping next. Oh, yes. It is 937 WEEI. Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson. Another one-hit wonder. Not bad.
Yeah, fine.
Perfectly fine.
Second place, I would say, is probably the Pina Colada song. That is a very good song. It's just you have to be in the right mood for it.
That's your number two one-hit wonder?
It's got a Cape Cod flair. So that would put that number two.
That song's so great. If you want to cheat on your wife, put an ad in the paper.
Is Ice Ice Baby anywhere?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Sure. Although he had
it's not original.
He had the ninja rap. So it's, I mean, that was kind of the follow up, you know? Go ninja, go ninja, go. Truer words have never been spoken. That Rupert Hope song is so great. So I was cheating on my lady and she was cheating on me. And we were both cheating all around, and then we ran into each other, and we said, we both like cheating on each other.
Now, I might also hear Warren G regulate. Warren G probably had more than one hit.
Yeah.
Underrated catalog.
DJ.
No, but that wasn't anywhere. That wasn't a hit.
Oh, it was a hit.
No. Regulate was a hit.
Go
hit, yeah.
DJ.
I've never heard Go DJ.
Or this DJ.
But then again, I'm not the market for that. But Warren G, actually, that era of rap I liked.
Yeah.
I did like it. And Warren, yeah, Regulate's fantastic. That's Snoop's. Like cousin, right?
Yeah, they're somehow yeah. connected.
Warren G. All right.
And Nate Dogg.
Yes, and of course, Nate Dogg. That was a good era of rap music. But I will say, we've got the ESPYs on tonight. And I know that the, you know, Drake May is up for Male Athlete of the Year. He's not going to. It's going to be, I'm telling you, I'm predicting it right now. It's going to be a New York Knicks jerk fest. Anything that they're up for, they're going to win.
Not sure you can
they're going to get up there. I'm sure you could say that. It's a bunch of jerks. They're a bunch of jerks.
Oh, yeah, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bunch of jerk fest. By the way, when I was talking about the Alyssa Liu, who's up for sports person of the year or whatever, I was describing it to you guys because I didn't think you remembered who it was. And I was like, oh, yeah, she's the she did an awesome job in the Olympics. And she had the piercing that went, it was like in like up beneath her lip, like between her teeth and her lip. I'd never seen it before. And I got this text. Alyssa Liu is not just an Olympian. She won the gold medal the first time for an American woman since 2002, yet you focus on her piercings? Show some respect
really?
And don't be a caveman.
Jeez, Rich, come on.
I'm trying to describe you.
It's 2026, Rich.
You got to remember that. I thought she was awesome. She was great because she like honestly seemed like nothing was stressful at all.
Yeah.
Like whatever she... kind of guru that she went to or
she had an interesting upbringing though. I think her career was kind of like she was so great early in her career and then it just got to be not fun for her. The sport didn't do much for her. And then I believe she found kind of a new re-energized approach to it. And that's what made her mentally, I think, in a different headspace than she was earlier in her career.
Yeah. Don't speak about her like a caveman like that, Ted. You're being a caveman. Speaking of like that. But the ESPYs are something that, you know, as I said, it's, you know, this is the one day of the year that they do it. It's after the All-Star break. It's usually when there's no sports on. At least there's the World Cup today. I have never been to an ESPYs, but there is somebody in this room who indeed has been to the ESPYs and not just been to the ESPYs. Am I wrong, Ted, in saying that you may have been on stage at the ESPYs?
I was.
Whoa.
Yeah, 2003.
Was that like the first ESPYs ever? When did they start?
I'm not sure, but it was fairly new.
Were you excited to go? Were you like,
I loved it.
Oh, really?
I loved it. So just, you know, a quick recap. I mean, I got to hang out with Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson. They were at least at the party we were at. We stayed at the Beverly Hills Hilton.
Oh, wow.
A famous hotel.
What do you mean hang out? Like, you actually like had beers with Vince Vaughn?
Dude, yeah. Yeah. And this was just after Wedding Crashers, I believe.
And by the way, people don't remember how massive Wedding Crashers was.
Huge,
like, that's when people used to go to the movies to see comedies.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then I was in. It was interesting. You leave the room where they're doing the event, and you go to the bathroom. They bring somebody in to sit in your seat, so it always
seat
looks
fillers,
full.
Baby.
And wow. I was in there taking a leak. Look over, and there's Billy Bush. Billy Bush looks at me and goes, Ted Johnson? I'm the biggest fan. I guess he's from the area. I didn't know that. Billy Bush was a big fan.
Were you there? Now, I take it that's because that year the Patriots are probably up for a million awards.
I think we're up for best team, and I was trying to find it. That was the year we beat the Panthers in the Super Bowl. William McGinnis. I'd never seen anything like it. The respect it was showed to Willie Max from L.A. And believe it or not, high school football in L.A. is kind of a big deal.
Really?
Yeah. And he went to a local high school, and he was a big star, not only there, but also at USC.
Yeah.
And so I remember Denzel Washington come walking by Willie and giving him his respect. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, that's cool. Like, out of all really the people cool. that you saw, I would think that Denzel would be one of the few that I would be like, awesome. Okay, you're larger than life.
And then that year, the host of it was Jamie Foxx, and he did a fantastic job. Another highlight, if you have that song, he serenaded Serena Williams. Do you guys remember this serenade?
Serena, this song is dedicated to you, and it's simply named. It's coming out on the ESPN record, so make sure you go get that as soon as you can. It's called Can I Be Your Tennis Ball?
Can I Be Your Tennis Ball?
Can I be your tennis ball, tennis ball, tennis ball? You can smack me up against the wall, do it slow or do it fast. Can I fit inside your bag?
There you go. So you got the highlights.
Show
of
some
it.
Respect to Serena Williams.
Me too. Me too.
That's good, hell? Sis. That's good, but you get the point. It goes on
He's
and
so
on.
So talented.
On. Do you guys want to maybe guess?
Yeah, let me guess.
Real quick, let's do.
Well, first of all, hang on. So you guys won that year, right?
Best team.
2003 or 2004? Would be.
It was the '04 calendar, but it was about the '03 team.
Who goes on stage? Because obviously the whole team didn't go.
No, the captains.
Okay,
so the captains got invited.
Okay,
there's like seven.
So that is you, Willie Mack, Brady. Remind me who else?
Teddy, Tom.
Okay, yeah, Bruschi, and
was Lawyer maybe?
Okay, and you all go up on stage.
All go up on stage.
Rodney,
Larry Izzo. Was Rodney? Yeah. Well, Rodney was here for. You know what? It was Rodney, not Lawyer, because Rodney came in.
Brady with Moynihan at the time?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. He was long past Tara Reid by that.
Yeah.
Time,
oh yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So. But yeah. So it was the captains that got invited. I think there were seven or eight of us that got to go out to this event. It was awesome, man. I had the best time ever. But if you some of the categories, if you can guess, best NFL player 2003. You have a guess for who best NFL player is?
Okay, in 2003, I mean, okay, well, then obviously isn't anyone.
I mean,
Brady.
It could have been Brady, yeah.
It's not. If you say it's tough. Oh, man, 2003, yeah, yeah. Peyton,
okay, what do you think?
So now I said Michael Vick, and I kind of cheated, and I looked, and maybe it was too early for Vick. He took off in 2004, I think.
The answer was best NFL player? Michael Vick.
Really? Wow. Was he at 03?
Michael Vick.
I was saying this, that Michael Vick, I remember when he came out, like he being one of the few athletes I've ever seen, and I went, all right, the game has changed forever.
People were obsessed with him, and it was hard not to be. He was busting off these 60-yard touchdown runs and, like, reversing direction.
So believe it or not, so we played the Atlanta Falcons 2001, the year we won our first Super Bowl, and, and this game goes under the radar, but we were playing the Atlanta Falcons, who the quarterback at the time was what was his name?
Chandler.
Yeah.
Chris Chandler, and his nickname was, we called him Chris Chandelier. Because when you hit him, we blitzed like we've never blitzed. We sacked their quarterbacks eventually by the end of the game was 9 times. Chris Chandler, we sacked 7 times. After the 7th sack, they put in Mike Vick, the rookie.
Yeah.
Mike Vick started running all over us, and I was like, holy crap. The kid was unbelievable, up close and personal. So that was his kind of his coming out party, was that game against us in the second half. But we'd already built up a big lead. It didn't matter. But then he went on to be just one of the, you know, from an athletic standpoint, one of the best athletic quarterbacks we'd ever seen.
They weren't supposed to do that. Quarterbacks were not supposed to do that. I'm trying to think of another athlete where I've seen play and I've been like, well, you've changed the game.
It's kind of like Bo Jackson, but you got to go way back. I mean,
yeah, I think the only one I can think it's close right now is when I see Wembanyama. I think that he's such a freak and that he's a player that is so large that can do everything that he may have changed the game.
Yeah, that's a good one.
But that's about it.
Best NBA player? Thinking along the best lines of
2003.
There you go.
Tim
Duncan. Best male golfer?
Tiger.
Tiger Woods. Best female tennis player?
Serena
Williams. Yes. Let's see. Best MLB player.
Ooh, 2003.
Were the Roys a big deal back then?
A-Rod.
Was that? Barry Bonds. Barry.
Barry.
Oh, Barry. Yeah, Barry. That's right.
There you go. Barry Bonds. So. Some highlights from that event. But the 2003 ESPYs I got to go to. I got to meet so many fascinating people.
Plus, you're a California guy. I was going back home,
and I loved it. Yeah, I was from Carlsbad, just a couple hours south of there. So yeah, it was beautiful. It was fun time. Just meeting all those stars was really, really cool.
That's cool. What is it like to hang out with Brady like back then? Because he's obviously different now, and he changed over the years.
I think the wall wasn't up quite yet.
Okay,
and just more of a normal dude.
Even though he
liked to kind of rub elbows with the celebrities, he was still, I think, a little bit more grounded then.
Yeah.
Impersonable and approachable. Yeah. But I think it's a different story now, right?
When did he move on from Tara Reid? I'm trying to remember the timelines. Was that before you won your first championship, or was, I think it was after, right? He'd won one.
It was
one.
After. Okay. So we won it in 01, and I feel like 02, you know, was, yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember Tara Reid being at the ESPYs, though, that was still calendar year 04,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But
she seemed like fun, though.
She was a good time, man. We hung out with her. She came to a Red Sox game. So the story goes, I remember we played the Chargers in San Diego, and she was, you know, she was literally the last person waiting on the outside the team buses and like waving to us as we were leaving. And then we hung out with her at a Red Sox game, right? Yeah. And she was awesome. She was so fun. I mean, hammered. totally hammered, but a good time. So
sure,
yeah, yeah. And then, you met, you know, his Bridget Monahan. It was I hung out with her a couple times. I'd rather talk to that table, be honest with you. not the funnest, not the real most engaging person ever.
Sure, so. I mean, you know,
I'd rather Tara Reid, way more fun to hang out with.
Oh, I could totally
way
see
more
that.
Fun.
I could totally
yeah,
see that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bridget Wall was up, baby.
Yeah,
and she was, you know, too cool for school.
Tara,
shoot, yeah, please, let's go.
She's like that woman for the 40-year-old virgin. I want some French. Oh, I could just see her just being sloppy and fun. Oh,
was,
man.
Good times.
I thought that was what Tom Brady should have done when him and Giselle broke up. It's like, you know what? You want respect is like going back to being everyman and all that. Go back to your roots, baby. Find out what Tara Reid's up to. And you guys go off into the sunset.
He might be. Didn't he date like Alex Earl? And now like she's making the rounds all summer. I mean, he's who knows what Tom.
I don't know what's going on. He's gotten weirder over the years. And I think if he went back to Tara Reid, we'd all be like, yeah, he's back. Our guy is back. That would be
like
nice.
LeBron, you're going back to Cleveland. right, go back to your roots.
Going back to your roots of sloppy Tara Reid. All right, 617-779-7937. We'll take your calls next. Is this Passenger?
Wow. That's impressive, bro.
He's full.
Imagine a guy singing like this.
Did you play this on VCN?
No. This was no. God, no. It's like a guy stepping on coal. He's trying not to wake up his parents recording this in his basement.
Is this supposed to be a one-hit wonder competitor?
Yeah, right, because you said that the best one-hit wonder is Saved Tonight by right. Eagle-Eyed Cherry.
978 texter, good suggestion. Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky. Excellent song.
You know what, though? We're going way old.
That's too old.
So there's a couple of bands that are one-hit wonders that are excellent bands, but they just had one hit. Like, you could say that The Darkness, I Believe in a Thing Called Love, they're a one-hit wonder. The Darkness is a great band. Like, they just put out great stuff. You could say Jimmy Eat World, The Middle, is a one-hit wonder. Jimmy Eat World's a great band. They put out great stuff.
No, yeah, they have more than one hit.
Apparently, the Stacey's Mom band, like, has, like, a bunch of great songs. Now, Stacey's Mom's a great one-hit
That's
wonder.
A hit. Yep.
That is a great song. All right, 617-779-7937.
We're talking about music.
Well, listen, I won't talk. I won't stop. It's Rich, Ken, and Ted here, and the Christian Gonzalez situation is interesting because we've had a lot of, you know, the Greg Bedard versus Christian Gonzalez thing kind of blew up. And it blew up because Christian Gonzalez let it blow up. You know, there was a, as we all know, he's due for an extension. And we also know that it's going to be really, really tough and a lot of money that the Patriots are going to have to dole out over the next couple of years if you're going to pay him enough money to set the market, and then you're going to pay Drake May, which obviously will set the market. So the whole time I was thinking it was a done deal. Ted was the first one who was like, dude, not so fast, man. We don't know where this is going to go. And then, of course, Greg Bedard's coming out saying that he has heard from people on the inside that they don't believe he's physical enough, and now they're saying they don't believe he's mentally tough enough. And Chris Gonzalez is getting mad and picking a fight with Greg Bedard. Where is the truth? Where are things going to land? I believe it's going to all get settled right before the season starts. You know, there's speculation that he might not even play if they can't get this done. And then, Ted, you had the whole idea that maybe they try to go to him and have him just give him a raise this year.
Yeah, just to get through this year, just maybe throw in, tack on a couple, $2-3 million. That is a tactic that Belichick has used before, which I think Belichick and the Krafts were very in line in how they saw contracts. So it's not a stretch to think that maybe, even though Bill is gone, that the same tactics that they use now are similar to the tactics they used when Bill was here. Because I think Jonathan and Robert always saw themselves as kind of forward-thinking when it comes to how they do contracts. So, you know, those guys are obviously still here and a big part of it. So,
and they have the same GM, Greg Bedard, has been here since.
That's right. This whole time. That's right. It's just, and I just wonder if they, you know, the kind of the man-to-man cornerback isn't what it, I don't know, that position isn't as lauded as it used to be or as specialized as it used to be, even though I think it's still very important. It's more money you see going into left tackles and tight ends. And it's like, well, more teams are playing zone. Do you need to pay a guy that's really good at man-to-man? Yeah, no, you still do. You know, it just feels as if it's not as, propped up that position as it used to be.
I just think that agent of his that everyone says he milks each team for everything they're worth for their players, that means he's a great agent. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to hear the Patriots say, how about we give you a raise this year? And he's going to say GFY.
Yeah, and probably so.
Especially when Witherspoon signs a deal because Seattle's going to pay money because they got new owners.
And they both share the same agent. I'm just I haven't seen any signs that he's physically not tough or see the mental part. I don't know. I'm not with him every day in practice, but in a game,
quiet. I mean, I don't think that means he's not mentally tough.
I think they're pointing at his reaction to Greg Bedard. I think they're looking at him getting offended and
he's probably
reacting.
Just bored. It's the summer. He's like, let me fire him off.
If you're going to judge a guy, you know, off of that one remark, I can't believe you're not going to give him a contract because of that.
I agree. I totally agree. But I think that's kind of what everyone's talking about now. And I these athletes kind of shoot themselves in the foot all the time by amplifying bad things that critics say about them. Because I would have never heard the Greg Bedard thing if Gonzalez didn't tweet it.
Why do you think? Okay, but let's just go before he responded to. Why do you think a team would want a reporter to put that information out there? Because it was only really one person putting it out there. It's Greg Bedard.
Yeah,
but to try to curry favor with the fans
in case what
things don't work out.
It stretches out into a long holdout.
That's it. So it's to prepare us. Like everybody's freaking out about Jaylen Brown because nobody that covered the Celtics would ever write anything negative about Jaylen Brown. So now that Jaylen Brown's traded, it's like, and all these reports on analytics and you know, right, really hard facts, not just opinions that come out that put him in a bad light. People are freaking out because the Celtics media never put any of that stuff out there. So I think a big part of it is the Patriots are maybe hesitant to give him all that money, and they're getting Greg Bedard to say that so that when they don't pay him the money, that we all can go, oh, yeah, well, he's soft, or he's not physically tough enough. I think that's why you do what
I'm surprised that guy Tom Haderstroh hasn't written the Jaylen Brown-esque stats article of the Gonzalez edition.
Haderstroh.
Maybe, listen, I think we just gave him a lead. You know, maybe he can do that now. Burt Breer said this the other day. I think this was yesterday. Yep, and he was talking about, you know, something that seems similar with this Christian Gonzalez situation, is this something he's seen in the past?
What's going to be so interesting about this is how different are they operating under Mike Vrabel and Elliott Wolf than they were under Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli and then Nick Caserio, where, like, with Bill, and Bill did a zillion things right. But part of the problem was they always needed to win the deal. They always and I think in some cases they cut off their nose to spite their face. Like the 06 season, that was my second year covering the league. And like those receiver negotiations with Deion Branch and David Givens, like that firebombed that season and maybe cost them a ring. And so like, you know, you have to balance like how badly do we want to win the deal and how badly do we want to set the precedent for the other players in the locker room versus we got a chance to build off of a Super Bowl year here, so we don't want to fiddle with that.
I think that's a fascinating comment because, and Ted, you were just removed from the team that year, right? You were just talking about how Peyton was carving him up in the 06 AFC title game.
That's it.
But they did. So they lost Deion Branch. He went to Seattle, and Givens left. Where he signed with like Houston or something, and they wouldn't pay
him
the big money.
Tennessee.
But they lost that game to Peyton, and they gave up like 38 points. So it's hard to say that's the reason they lost or that cost them Super Bowl, right? I mean, I know they did have receiver issues. And that was the game people remember for the Big Eyes. What's his name?
Rishay Caldwell.
Rishay Caldwell was like dropped two passes.
Yeah.
But is that a fact that you do believe what Burt Breer is saying is true? Like this is 06-ish if they don't pay Gonzalez. It's like letting Deion Branch go. And did that cost them a title that year?
I don't think it did cost them a title. Okay, so did it kind of erode at maybe what I don't know, the Patriots were being looked at as a destination and wanting to go there. Once you started realizing, like, they're starting to really nickel and dime guys, and they're really, you know, popular players, guys you drafted and developed, you're not willing to give them, you know, good money. Like, so I think that's where the narrative started changing, where it was kind of like, yeah, the Patriots, man, they're trying to get off on the cheap here with just because they got a great quarterback, they're skimping on all the other areas, and is that a place you really want to go play? I think that's really what that season, by not signing those guys to extension, started kind of. Percolating that narrative, if you will.
You know, somebody on text said, why did Bedard have to make that comment anyway? Seems like it just came out of left field for no reason. And I will explain both of those questions. Why did Bedard have to make that comment? Because I believe that he probably heard it, whether it was from a phone call from somebody or he overheard it while covering the team, that somebody who was a decision maker said that about Gonzalez. And I don't care if Robert Kraft himself picked up the phone and called
Greg
Bedard.
That's what Ted said. He has a red phone in his house.
But I don't care if he did that. If I'm Greg Bedard and I'm a reporter and somebody who's making the decision says that about it, I'm reporting it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change the fact that they think that about him, whether they're using you as a tool or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to report that. That is your job. Now, it's our job to decipher whether or not we think this is a smear campaign or this is a way to win favor with the fans. And I think we're all smart enough to figure out that could be the case.
There's a danger of that, though, because you remember when Schefter got used by the Pats and they said we wouldn't trade Jimmy Garoppolo for four firsts, and then they ended up trading him when push came to shove. Mm-hmm. Maybe Brady forced their hand and they said, get this guy out of here. So sometimes you can report something and look bad for saying that.
I still would report it. If like one of the decision makers told me exactly what they thought, I'm going to report it. Isn't that your job? And as I said, we're all sophisticated enough and know enough about how this goes to go, I smell a smear campaign. I smell like exactly like you said, trying to win favor in case this goes sideways. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean it's true, but if you're Christian Gonzalez, I just don't think you say anything. Because you know what? Don't let them have that power.
You lose the high road.
Yeah, people to know are here. You literally retweeted that message.
It's tough.
What I don't know is when he starts missing time and they start finding him $15,000 a day, does he have enough saved up? Like, is that going to hurt? Will he care about that, or is he fine?
Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah, that's a lot of money. If he misses, I don't know, if he would have missed minicamp, he didn't. He was there, but he just didn't participate. It would have been like $130,000. Like, the fines are so ridiculous now.
But you're about to make like $150 million. Guaranteed. At some point, some team's going to pay him that. Like, you can hold out for a little while.
When's the last guy, the guys that didn't get signed after their third year, going into their fourth year, that played the same position in recent history, did they hold out?
No, not really.
They all played.
They all played the year.
So he'd be the first one to actually hold out.
That's what I'm saying.
The last person to hold out, I think, for the Patriots was Logan Mankins, and he held out, and then came back after the 10th week of the season. I forget, because if you don't, then you don't get your vested. You want to make sure you get a vested
year under your
your pension. But it's very rarely guys hold out.
Yeah,
Le'Veon Bell did.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you saw what happened. So
he's in MMA. He's fighting Missoula.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's jacked.
It'll be a dark cloud over this team when you get all these good vibes from the Super Bowl last year. If you don't take care of this kid, I think he's
207 text Matt Judon. Yep. Training camp pulled out. They eventually traded him. Good call.
It's gonna be weird.
That was under Mayo.
That was Mayo, and he didn't handle that well.
No,
he did not. All right, 617-779-7937. All right, if you had to put together a team of players that you just needed one win from, you had one game, and you could hand pick each position on an NFL team, who are you picking at quarterback? Who are you picking at wide receiver? Who are you picking at tight end, defensive end? We'll get to that right after this. 2 minutes, we'll be back.